Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Human Rights Demand. This is NBO Hour at Human Rights Demand, and that is the New Vision Organization, which is headed by Ms. Leona Brando. Leona Brando is a former social worker who herself found out what it was like to be one of the families who has a member who has been placed under incarceration with little or no hope of ever emerging. And so she decided that what was needed was a prisoner activist organization that involves the family, involves professionals, and the inmates themselves in increasing human rights for prisoners, seeing to their medical needs behind bars, that they have good information about the status of their cases and access to pro bono legal services where that can be arranged. So those are some of the things that this volunteer prisoner activist organization does, and it's called New Vision Organization. My name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill, and I'm station manager here at Human Rights Demand. You know, in the 1800s, a slavery abolitionist named Frederick Douglass said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. So we are here online at 3 o'clock most days every week to make human rights demands part of people who are oppressed for different reasons. Many of them are prisoners, and that's why Ms. Leona Brando joins you every Monday at 3 p.m. Our shows have been lengthened now so that our shows here at Human Rights Demand last up to 2 hours instead of the regular 1 hour or less. So let me give you the guest call-in number so that you can call in and talk to Ms. Brando and her guest, if her guest is going to be available. I want you to call them and discuss prisoner activism with an expert. Ms. Brando has been doing this for, I know, over 10 or 15 years, and she even had experience with prisoners' needs before she became full-time prisoner activist. The telephone number is 347-857-3293. Please give a ring. You will be heard on air. 347-857-3293. You can also call that number and simply listen. You don't have to speak if you're not comfortable speaking at this time. Hello, Ms. Brando. Are you on the air with us?
Yes, I am. Ms. Neal, how are you?
I am doing very well. Thank you. You go right ahead. Your guest, are you expecting your guest still, Mr. Wombly?
Yes, he should be on with us soon if he isn't already.
Well, go right ahead and address your audience. We are waiting to learn from you, and mostly we want to know what you're involved in now and how the public can help.
You know, Mary, you mentioned the activism. I've been doing this since 1996, 97, and I started New Vision, though, in New Vision Organization in 2004. But one of the things is I want to say, and I admire you, I give you a lot of credit, because a situation that was so bad in your life made you turn into something that was very, very valuable to all advocates. You started to really advocate for your brother, Larry Neal, who was killed in prison, a mentally ill individual. But because of that, you have inspired.
Let me make a quick correction. Larry Neal was free, like you and me. He was secretly arrested. I don't know whether he was secretly arrested to do some sort of scientific experimentation or whether he was secretly arrested to murder, but he was free like you and me. He was secretly arrested and killed after 18 days of secret incarceration in Memphis Shelby County Jail. So it's a little bit more sinister than prisoners being killed in prison, even though that's terrible. And it happens all the time. Larry was a free man. So any of us are subject to being treated like Larry Neal was, because he was free, he was out, and police arrested him, denied having him, and murdered him. And we don't know what any of that was about yet, because they won't release any papers on his fatal arrest. Go right ahead.
And this is exactly what I was going to say, though. As you said, any prisoner is susceptible to having something like that happen to them.
Any American, because understand, Larry was not a prisoner. He was a person just free, just like
exactly.
You and me. If you go downtown one day and you don't show up ever again, that would be what happened to Larry Neal, not a prisoner, but a free man. Go right ahead.
In any situation like that, and, you know, as I said, with Larry's case, it was very sad, but at the same time, it shouldn't happen to anyone. And what's been going on now, and you heard about it recently, I didn't realize it until I heard about this gentleman that was scalded to death in Florida. I mean, this is so barbaric. It just sickens me to think that we have in this country, we have people that are supposed to be overseeing the American prisoners. And I'll say another thing: it doesn't matter if they're American or any other country. It's so inhumane, and especially living in a country where we have a government that insists that these kind of things will not be tolerated in other countries. Why do they think it's any different in this country? It's no different whether it happens here or abroad, and it really infuriates me to hear about people being scalded to death, people being baked to death in prison with the heat turned up so high that the other prisoners can hear the screams down the hall and other areas of the prison. I am just so sick to even hear something like that. And I don't care what our government says. This government is worse than any other country, as far as I'm concerned. Worse than any other country. And I'll tell you, a lot of people end up in prison, and some may look at prisoners as being scum, being animals. But I'll tell you, they don't know the situation, because a lot of times it's the so-called righteous that bring their own children up so bad that their children cause others to be imprisoned. And yet they sit there like they're some kind of high and mighty person, judging as though they were God themselves. And I know for a fact that prisoners, many of them, are in prison because of the faults of others, the so-called righteous. And then to do what they did to not only this prisoner in Florida, to scald him to death, having him in a locked in a shower stall for a half an hour or more, screaming, begging for his life, and no one does anything about it, and it's been 2 years now, and here we have an investigation out there that has gone nowhere. We have people that committed the crime that have not been charged because they wear a uniform. These things, Mary, are the things that we as advocates need to really focus on. And I get very upset sometimes when I hear of advocates who are like children, who turn around and because they don't hear what they want to hear from another advocate, or they don't want to get involved, or they don't feel there's a plan of action in place, which there's a plan of action. There's a lot of plans of action, but one of the main things is to get it out to the media, get it out to the public so that they know, so that they're educated on what's happening. But when you have advocates that say, give me a plan of action and I'll participate, that doesn't even make sense. Because a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old would know what to do in a case like that. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. When somebody is tortured to death, there's only one thing to do. Come together as a united front to do something about it, to get the word out there, to make it demand that something be done. And I just cannot figure out what kind of country that we live in that where they can't even think for themselves. They can't even come up with a plan on their own. Somebody else has to make a plan for them. And these are the things that I wanted to bring out. And as I said in an email I just sent out about an hour ago to one of the advocates from Germany, this man advocates for American prisoners all the way from across the pond, as they put it, when we have advocates in our own country that are doing absolutely nothing but sending chat back and forth, sending chats around, sending emails that don't even make sense, that don't have anything to do with prison issues. And this is what we're being subjected to when we have issues that we're trying to deal with the incarcerated who are being severely abused and neglected. And someone said that mentally ill and mental retardation are two different things. And I already know that. Mentally ill and mental retardation, mentally challenged and mentally retarded are two different things. But mentally challenged it's still a mental illness. And this is something that people forget. They think because they're not completely mentally retarded that they're not mentally ill. These are issues that we need to talk about, because mentally challenged, mentally ill is all the same. There's a need for psychological help. And these programs in the free world are not working. Why is our government giving out all this funding to these people that do not do anything with the funding that they're getting, but bring these people in and get them out as quick as they can so that they can have another load come in so that they keep the funding going, the funding flowing? This is what's happening in this country. And then the funding that's being put out, a lot of it is going to research. How much research can the Department of the American Psychological Association do? How much research can they do? And when they do research, what are they coming up with? They're not coming up with any kind of solutions that really are helping anybody but themselves. These are the kind of issues that I'm getting upset with. So our American government, I wish that they would sit down and talk to all of us.
Ms. Leona Brando, I want to say that the funding is not regulated there. the American Psychological Association. It's not regulated by them. And I think that some of their studies have been quite useful because they're able to publish results on studies conducted by professionals that give us great insight into the need. And if we didn't have studies that were connected to the problem by professionals, then it would be hard to get the funding and it would be hard to get support on certain bills that we want to present for change. And so the American Psychological Association does do a good deal of help. But I want to say that the funding that we question is the funding that goes to an organization called SAMHSA. S-A-M-H-S-A. That organization, as I understand it, gets pretty much the entire budget for psychiatry in America regarding, you know, the funding from the U.S. government. And they give it to different organizations as they see fit. They have been giving some of the funding to organizations that even deny that mental illness exists. So it is SAMHSA that we'd like to bring into question rather than the APA. Thank you.
If that's the case, then maybe this is something that you should send around sometime so that we can get more educated in those areas as well. But it still remains, first of all, experts. These experts that have this piece of paper that they get from going to a university or college for 4 or 5, 6 years, I don't know. All I know is that they're not experts, because if they were experts, they would see the problem, and they would see it in a big way, just as I see it. As a social worker, I can see it. Where is the American Psychological Association in this? I still say that they can be a big help, that they can help if they really wanted to.
Well, they did see a study that was very helpful a few months ago. They published the results of a study that shows that black boys with mental illness are treated very differently and very harshly compared to other school children. Black boys with mental illness are treated more harshly than any other group of school children. And, you know, you and I can say that we observe that, but it's another matter to have that in a psychological study published by the American Psychological Association. That gives those findings much more weight than just what you and I casually observed. And so now it has already been documented, and it is already tested and true that the most discriminated group of school children in the United States are black boys with psychological or psychiatric problems. So that is a documented fact. That is one of the important purposes of the APA, and I want to congratulate them on doing that study and showing the results of their study to the entire world. And it shows that people who have boys who have attention deficit disorder, autism, or PTSD, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or what have you, whatever your black boys have that is keeping them under psychiatric care or showing that they need it, that will also relegate them to being in an underclass of students, students who are very discriminated against. They're punished very harshly for any infraction that they do, and also they're more likely to drop out of school than any other group. The dropout rate for children who are black boys with mental and emotional problems is over 36%. And we know that the dropout rates also are tied to the future prison rates. So as being dropouts, they're more liable to also end up being inmates. So one thing ties to another. But I already wrote about SAMHSA and their funding, and it's in my Human Rights for Prisoners blog. Please go there to the Human Rights for Prisoners March and look at the article regarding SAMHSA and some of the very questionable programs that they fund. For instance, they funded one program that was expensive. It was funded with your tax money, and it's called Dance Your Way to Mental Health. Well, if somebody's in the middle of a schizophrenic crisis, dancing is not going to help them. So many of their programs are for people who have moderate mental illness, when the problem is the people who go to jail, the people who are shot down by police, the people who are tasered to death are not people with moderate mental illness generally. These are people with severe mental illness, and the bill, H.R. 3717, says that the money needs to be concentrated not on people with moderate mental illness. For instance, someone who's got the empty nest syndrome, their children have grown up and gone to college, and they suffer from little bouts of depression. No, they don't need the lion's share of the funding. It needs to be the people who have severe mental illness. So thank you very much. You can go to Human Rights for Prisoners March blog and look at the article about SAMHSA, and those are the people who determine where the lion's share of your tax money regarding psychiatric problems go. Ms. Leona?
Yes, what I was going to say is getting back to square one, we have prisoners who have mental illnesses. Whether they have, and it's not just stress. People that go to college may be stressful. Most of them have money. They come from backgrounds of wealth. Then you have those that don't come from backgrounds of wealth who are struggling to go to college and who were victims themselves as children, which leaves them with a severe psychological problem. Now, the way I look at it, when I'm looking for resources for New Vision Organization and I go on the Internet and I type in all these programs, I'm getting all these different programs from the Department of Corrections and from all these other places, when in fact I go on there looking for these resources that they're supposed to have, and again, it's all research. So people are getting money from all over the place for research, and that's all it's about. It's only about research. It's not about programs for those that are coming out. These are the problems that we're running into constantly, is where are the programs? Where is this money going? This money is going into the pockets of somebody, but it's not going into the help of the prisoners. They wonder why the recidivism rate is so high. The recidivism rate is high because there's no programs when they come out. And this is sad. This is very sad because we are in America. When I was abroad, I'll tell you one thing. If I didn't have to be here because of my situation with my loved one, there's no way I'd even be in this country. So, you know, somebody said in an email to the National Alliance for Prisoners' Rights, with I had co-founded years ago and dropped out because it became a chat room, I had mentioned this. I am an activist, and people, sometimes they don't like what I'm saying. But I'm truthful. You will never find me in a lie. I've never been like that. I'll never be like that. What happens is we have advocates who, rather than do anything, would rather be on a chat room, would rather be talking. But we also have prisoners who are getting ready to come out, and we have nothing for them because our government chooses to ignore all these things and give monies out for no reason at all. We wonder why we're in such an economical crisis in the United States. It's because the money is floating all around the ones that need it and into the hands of governmental officials, whether it be the penal system, whether it be the government, the president, the governor, I don't know. But they make a lot of unnecessary trips abroad. They're going to all these different countries to do what? They claim to do, to negotiate, to try to make things better. How in the heck? I just get infuriated. There was a mayor in the town of Brockton, Massachusetts, who he lost the election the last time to a woman, and the woman is now someone else's in. But this mayor was making all these trips to this island, And when they asked about the debate, you know, what do you feel that you have contributed to Brockton while you were in office? And the man says, I paid out of my own pocket. I went to this island because I wanted to learn what their culture was about. And he said, that's why I went. Well, lo and behold, he didn't go for that reason at all, because I knew a lot of the natives from that place who told me he had built a house out there. He was in good with one of his top men was a Cape Verdean, I'll tell you. And as a result, he was going over there because he built a house he was planning on using for retirement. So he no doubt he had to pay it on his own, because it had nothing to do with the town. This is what we have a lot of people doing. They're going on these trips. They're claiming that they're going to better the communities and to know better how to deal with people in the communities. That's a crock of bull. And I don't know who they think they're fooling. But I'll tell you, we have a pretty ignorant society if they can't see through all this garbage. A pretty ignorant society. And I'm just infuriated, because everybody talks about how bad the prisoners are, many prisoners and all this. They don't deserve to live. They don't deserve for this. They don't deserve for that. Well, these prisoners are being, they're serving, not only serving their time, but they're being severely abused at the same time. So when they come out, they're full of anger, they're full of vengeance, and then you hear of all these people, all these law enforcement officers being shot down and being killed because of it. What do they expect when they have a system that's failing everybody? The system is failing not only the prisoners, it's failing the families of the prisoners. It's failing the advocates. It's failing everybody. Not to say the advocates are not wrong, because the advocates could do a lot more than they're doing too. Just like our guest today, our guest was supposed to be on with us today. That's how much of an advocate he is. But I hate phony people. I've always hated phony people. And there's a lot of phony people out there, even amongst the advocates. I wonder how many of us are actually advocates to get information, and how many advocates that are trying to make a change. Because that's what we have. We have a lot of phoniness in this country. As I say, I can make enemies. I don't mind, because I'm not out to gain friends. I'm not out to be Miss Popularity. I don't need the popularity. People seem to think that they have to rely on their peers, on their friends. They have to rely on anybody that seems to have a little bit more than they have. And these people trying to be like the Jones, trying to get recognition, I don't know what they're trying to do, but what they're doing is selling their soul to the devil. And that's exactly what it is, selling their soul to the devil. Now, they can either become advocates, or they can, you know what, I really have gotten to the point now where I don't even care if advocates want to communicate or not. A man was boiled to death in Florida, and everybody said they wanted to do something about it. But yet, we had a problem even getting a Google group or whatever to join. It became a blog. How does it become a blog? I don't know. People are so used to blogging and talking and chatting that they don't know how to put a site up where you can actually go and sign up. And I was putting the word out to everybody, and I was getting people that were writing back saying, how do we get in? They couldn't get in. I don't know how to put blogs together. If I did, I sure wouldn't have put one together like that. But these are the problems that we have in not only in the country. This is a problem we have in our own advocacy network. And so I might, after today, I might have a lot of enemies. Could I care? No, I don't. But the thing is, I want people to know that we have people that are being crucified, that are being burned alive, that need help, the families need help, to stop it so that other people don't have to go through it. And we can either choose to come together to try to do something about it, or we can sit back and do exactly what everybody's been doing, sending chats around, left and right. I'm just so fed up. I'm fed up with the whole shebang. There's no reason why anybody needs to go through that when they go to jail. And if that's what the system is about, I have no use for it. I'm disgusted with America. I'm disgusted with their whole policies and how they do things. What they need to be doing right now is they need to be out there. They need to be reviewing these cases individually, reviewing them individually to see who deserves to be in and who deserves to be out. They need to try to do their job a little bit more. We have a government that doesn't even know how. They don't know how to run a country. And then I just saw something that either you or somebody sent around to me the other day or this morning about what President Obama said. This country is so ignorant, they don't know how to do anything for themselves. So now what is this all about? World order or whatever? I mean, I have not a clue.
Liana, that video turned out to be propaganda. They only took out part of President Obama's speech that will reflect badly on him, and they published only part of his speech. He was criticizing the idea that only a certain amount of people in this powerful order would make decisions. And he was saying how people reject that idea. People actually shortened that statement to the point that it made it appear that it was what he was saying rather than what he was criticizing. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because on YouTube, it seems like the president himself is saying that people are too small-minded to run their own affairs, and that they need an all-powerful order to surrender their individual rights to, when that is not really what he said. He was criticizing that frame of mind, and he was pointing out merely that that is what some people think, that people, individuals like you and me, should surrender our rights to an all-powerful order. So that is incorrect. That is not what he said. And if anybody else received that video, because I sent it, I want to let you know right now that I do not purposefully send propaganda. And it was presented that way on YouTube, with only part of his statement being cut out so that it would give the appearance that the president said such a thing when he actually did not. The reason it was very easy for me to believe that the White House had said such a thing is because, regardless of whether he said it or not, it does happen that individual rights are being ignored and individual rights are being set aside, and that there is some sort of idea that individual people should surrender their rights to some powerful order that will ignore individual rights. Since that's what's happening in my life, since that's what happened to my brother, since that is happening in the lives of the hundreds of people that I advocate for regarding their mentally ill loved ones, I thought that the announcement had really been made, but it has not. These are the things that are being done undercover. Individuals are being deprived of their constitutional rights on a regular basis in order to facilitate arrest, in order to excuse or overlook balance by police, and in order to censor individuals like Liana Brando and myself who want to make things better. So censorship is happening, and we know that violates the First Amendment right. We know that people are being deprived of their rights to life, because she just told you about the mentally ill man who was scalded to death in Florida. She told you about the mentally ill man, Mr. Murdaugh, who was baked to death in New York. We told you about my brother, Larry Neal, who was a free man like you and me, who was secretly arrested and murdered in Memphis Shelby County Jail. But understand, he did not start out in jail. He started out a free man, and he was secretly arrested. So that was way before NDAA passed, but it happened in 2003. So we're telling you about some of the circumstances that are happening to people in violation of their civil and human rights. So these things are happening. They are proved. They are already a matter of our mainstream news press, as well as different organizations and what have you. They are indisputable facts. Police officers and the corrections officers who are involved in these overuse of force incidents are very seldom punished. They're very seldom even terminated. They're very seldom even called into investigation. So these sort of incidents where individuals' rights to life are taken away from them, their right to liberty are taken away from them without any due process of law whatsoever, we protest that, and we would like for you to get on board and protest it with us. I want to remind everybody that nothing really trickles down but blood, sweat, and urine. Those trickle down. But the thing is that oppression rises like heat. And so what seems to be the condition of the homeless mentally ill today as the least in our society, that's the homeless mentally ill, it rises like heat. So they started out by shooting mentally ill people, specifically the homeless mentally ill some years ago. But now they worked their way up, and last year they shot a Caucasian young man who was about to graduate with honors from a university in Texas. And the police officer shot him simply because he said he was belligerent with him. He shot him 5 times, including several shots in the back. And nothing at all, no charges were levied against the police officer who killed this Caucasian young college senior who was graduating with honors. So what started out being a problem that was centered on black, mentally ill, homeless people, it moved up now, and it also happens to Caucasian mentally ill people like Kelly Thomas, who was beaten to death by 6 Fullerton County police officers, and none of them went to jail behind that murder. They were prosecuted, but none of them were found guilty of the murder, and none of them were made to serve time for the murder. And now we've gotten to the point that even Caucasian people, young, healthy, and not behind bars, just going home after a party, can be stopped and shot to death by police officers, and that police officer who shot the young man in Texas is still on the job. So that is what I meant when I said that oppression rises. It may seem like it's something that is done to people in a specific race or economic class today, but eventually, if we don't stop it, it will be done to supposedly upper-class people tomorrow. It moves up. Oppression moves upward. And in Nazi Germany, each group that was oppressed, it was ignored. It kept being ignored. It kept being ignored until finally the entire country was surrounded with a great wall. And they were all prisoners in that country. And so if something like that to happen in the United States of America, it's time for you to speak up now while we're talking about people who you might consider the least in society. You need to speak up now while we're talking about mentally ill people being drugged into a shower in Florida, and the hot water turning on him as high as it could go. And they're scalding him so badly that the skin separated from his muscles. You need to speak up now while we're talking about the black veteran, the black Marine veteran, I believe, who was arrested for trying to find a warm place to sleep on a Harlem rooftop last year and baked to death in Rikers Island. You need to speak up now while we're talking about even a man who was free, like you and me, but who was arrested in Memphis in 2003 for the explicit purpose of maybe scientific experimentation, maybe for torture training. He was kept 18 days and murdered, and the U.S. government, your U.S. government, my U.S. government, refuses to give any information about why this man was arrested and why he was murdered and why nothing was done to investigate his murder or punish his the perpetrators. That is the wrongful death of Larry Neal, which you can see online. So these things must not go unanswered. They must not go without accountability because oppression moves upward. I can tell you about a well-to-do white man who heard a noise outside of his house, and he walked out into his garage with his pistol to check on the noise that was in his house, and police officers shot him dead. Yes, this was a well-to-do white gentleman who was in a very first-class neighborhood, and he walked out into his garage to check on the noise that he had heard, and the police officer shot him dead. So these things are not just happening to mentally ill people who happen to belong to racial minorities. These things are happening all over the country, even to your well-to-do Caucasians. Go right ahead, Ms. Leona, and I'll come in on these things.
Okay, what I was going to say, Mary, is when you were talking about what was said about President Obama, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I believe in this country there are two governments. People don't realize it, but the president is not the only one running the country, and he's not even running the country. It's the big corporate offices that are running the country. But the thing is, I believe there are two forms of government. I believe there is one that is very shady, and there is one that is trying to do the best that they can. What's happening in this country, and I believe the same thing, as I said, with advocates. We have some really dedicated advocates who are out there trying to do the right thing, and then there's a few out there that are doing just the opposite because they're almost like serving two masters. So the problem is right now, whether white, black, red, yellow, or whatever color, whatever the gender, whatever the race, whatever the age, whatever the religion, we need to come together to demand that the prisons across the country be investigated. We need to demand that we have more consistency in the way the prisons are run across the country, because every state is run differently, but the problems are all the same. And when it gets to be to a point where people are being massacred, when people are being mutilated, when people are being killed in prison, for being helpless, for being caged and not being able to defend themselves. We have some inhumane people that are overseeing our government. We have inhumane people that are overseeing the penal system. And we've got to do something about it. And that's all I've been trying to do, is to get advocates to unite, and their families, their friends, and the friends and family of prisoners. We all need to come together. We all need to unite, because it's the people. The people make up the government. And if the people are allowing these things to happen, then they're not being the government that they should be. They're just laying back because it hasn't happened to them yet, or it hasn't happened in their situation. They're laying back, and they're just letting everybody else do the work. But the thing is, it's not going to get done if we continue to do it the way we're doing it. And there's over 2.5 million prisoners in this country. 2.5 million prisoners. I'm sure there's a lot of them that have family and friends. So we have another couple of million right there in the advocacy world, in the family world. We have enough to do something about it. But with the cold mentality of people today, the coldness, the carelessness of them, I know that crime is on the increase, and I know a lot of people are disgusted with it, but they have to stop and think, why do we have this escalation in the crimes? Why is it continuing? First of all, we have prisoners who have been in and out for 18, 20, 30 times. They come out to nothing. They end up going back in. We have a system that does not provide resources for them when they do come out. We have a government where they will not work with organizations. They will work with us, but we cannot send our volunteers in. We have a media outlet throughout the country that cannot go into the prisons unless getting permission, and usually it's only if somebody's writing a book on prisoners or for their own benefit. The media can't get in. Organizations that are really trying to do something for these prisoners, trying to work with the system so that we can have a smooth transition from prison to society with our clients. And we're not getting the help from the penal system. We're not getting the help from the Department of Corrections across the country. Although we do have some case managers in the prisons who gladly work with us, we have the majority are trying to keep us out. They're trying to keep the media out. They're trying to keep anybody out that can find out what's going on inside. These prisoners, many of them are being abused. They're being severely abused. They're being deprived. Some of them are looking like refugees from another country. Many of them are in solitary confinement. They have been for years and years. Nobody knows about these people because no one is going in to investigate. No one is going in to investigate.
You, Ms. Brando, could you tell us how sincere and concerned people would be able to stand up and become New Vision Organization advocates and begin to help you write letters on behalf of abused and brutalized and neglected prisoners, who would be able to help point them to pro bono legal services, so that they can find out what's in their charts and find out.
You know, Mary, in the short time I've been talking, in the short time I've been on this radio show, I've had seven. Right now, I'm looking at my emails. I have seven people that have sent to volunteer with NVO in this short time, signing up to be advocates for the abused, signing up to be case managers, signing up to be pen pals. This is all in this short time I've been on the phone, which is only, 40 minutes, seven people. So people are hearing about what we're trying to do, and some of them are trying to help. So this is what I'm saying, if
That's
anybody
wonderful.
Wants to help.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, who want to stand up and be advocates. Thank you very much. How can more people contact you, Leona, and volunteer their services to help you in your quest to bring help to our prisoners?
We are registered with United Way, with Volunteer Match, with Connect and Serve, with Mass.gov, with Rhode Island Serve. They can go on to any one of these sites, and they can sign. They can see all the opportunities, and they can sign up. Or they can go to the HTTP, newvisionorganizationinc.com. Again, it's
you
New Vision Organization.
Excuse me, Leona, you said dash com. Did you mean dot com? Could you give us that website again?
It's New Vision Organization, Inc. dash com dot webs dot com. HTTP, New Vision Organization, Inc. com.webs.com, or they can email me at nvopres@verizon.net or nvopres@gmail.com.
And you're saying nvopres@gmail.com.
At Verizon.net or at gmail.com.
Thank you. And so write to me, audience. It's MaryLovesJustice@gmail.com. That's MaryLovesJustice@gmail.com. The thing is that prisoner activists and New Vision Organization is people who want to join in. You may already have some skills to offer. Even if it's just that you will make phone calls on behalf of inmates, it may just be that you will write letters or sign petitions and distribute petitions on behalf of New Vision Organization's inmates. You might have an inmate who is incarcerated who needs advocacy. You may need someone to call and speak to the social worker at the prison on behalf of a mentally ill inmate. You might know some inmates who could use services by New Vision Organization. So whether you have someone you'd like to recommend for services or whether you are willing to join in and provide services yourself. Either way, we'd love to hear from you at New Vision Organization. You've been listening today to the thoughts and the concerns put to you by Leona Brando, who's the president of New Vision Organization. Boy, we can tell today that she's a little bit upset over the lack of positive responses from the government and from the business regarding their participation in making things better and more equitable and more humane for inmates who are incarcerated in America. I want to say that how our prisoners are treated is supposed to be a concern for everyone who believes in democracy and human rights, but it's a specific concern for people who claim to be Christians, because Hebrews 13:3 says that we are to be mindful how prisoners are treated and esteem their bodies as though they are our very own. So
exactly.
If you were the one who was being burned alive in small solitary confinement cells like Jerome Murdaugh was in New York Rikers Island, if you were the one being dragged into a small shower and the boiling water turned on you and you lie there face up until you are scalded to death and your skin separates from your muscle, you would, number one, want someone to stop the abuse. And number two, you would like for those officers who treated you that way to be at least fired so they couldn't continue to mistreat people. And secondly, you would want them to be prosecuted because what they did, quite simply, was a murder. And so until corrections officers and police officers are held accountable to at least the same standards that you and I are not to kill people, until they're held to those same standards, then nothing will be done. And that's where petitions and letter writers come in. We need people to bombard the offices of our public officials and let them know, first of all, that we are concerned about the prisoners. Because when it comes to the mentally ill, oftentimes they do not vote. They are usually not voters. But if we, the voters, let our public officials know that we care about how the mentally ill are treated, let them know that we care how prisoners are treated. Prisoners also, most of them, have lost their right to vote. So that's one reason why elected officials don't try to address their issues. They're not voters. But you're a voter. I'm a voter. Leona is a voter. We must let our elected officials know that part of how we choose who to vote for is who cares about human rights for our non-voting prisoners, our non-voting people with severe mental illness. So we can only do that by writing them letters, sending them emails, sending them text messages, and letting them know that we're very concerned about people who are not allowed to vote, who are prisoners, ex-felons, who are not finding the reentry opportunities that they need, and the mentally ill, severe mental patients who are also usually not voters. Let them know that you, who are voters, you, who are their constituents, do care about these matters. And so it's very important that we communicate with people. We must communicate with our officials because, it's you know, having elected officials is more or less like a marriage. You can have a fabulous wedding, but if you don't keep the lines of communication open after your wedding day, your marriage will fail. So we have terrific election events and parties after the election, but then it's like we don't talk to those elected officials on a day-to-day basis. We don't contact them when we have concerns that we want them to know about. So therefore, the whole process fails. And it breaks down. So we must keep our elected and appointed officials apprised of the circumstances that impact us and let them know what we want them to do about it. And nobody has ESP. Nobody has ESP and all those other things. So we must actually put pen and ink together, and we must actually put the pen to the paper and write letters. We must actually pick up the phone and dial the USDOJ. We must email the USDOJ and say, hey, what about your obligation to protect people who are institutionalized in the United States of America? What are you doing to earn my tax money? And you can write to the USDOJ by email. Just simply go askdoj@usdoj.gov. Again, that's askdoj@usdoj.gov. Ask the usdoj.gov what they plan to do about the people in Florida scalding a mentally ill prisoner to death. This was no accident. And also they have a film of the guard who drugged the man into the shower. There's a film of that. And neither guard was even terminated, and neither guard was brought up on charges. Ask the USDOJ what is being done about the negligent prison staff up in Rikers Island that actually did not do their job and make rounds and see about people in solitary confinement. Ask why they're still on the payroll, if they are, and ask what is going to happen regarding that. And so if you show your interest, then I believe our elected and appointed officials will be more receptive to putting in place the measures that we need to keep people who have serious mental illness more safe. Thank you. Go right to the
office. You know, that's another thing. Prisoners, they lose their voting rights when they go to prison. You know, my opinion on that is that they lose their voting rights because people in politics, they know that prisoners would probably vote for the ones that are actually being fair and that are actually going to try to do something to make it right. People don't want prisoners to have that right to vote. Because if they had that right to vote, we'd have some fair people getting elected, and that's what it's all about. Hold back on giving the prisoners that right, or we may not be put in office because we are the ones that are bribing, we are the ones that are corrupt, we are the ones that are messing up. So I believe that's the main reason why prisoners are treated the way they are and take the rights taken away, because in spite of the fact that somebody goes to prison for a crime, it doesn't mean that they should lose their rights as an American citizen. Anybody that goes to prison is still an American if they look at it that way, which they should, because they haven't done anything to take away their citizenship. They were born in this country. They have the right to be able to do the same things other than being locked up. They have the right to be able to do the same things that any normal citizen of the U.S. can do. And this is where I believe taking away their rights to vote has nothing whatsoever to do with them being incarcerated. It's just a political thing where people are afraid that they're going to vote for the person that they believe is being fair. That's what it's all about. The ones that they believe are being fair. There are politicians out there that are trying to help. There are politicians that see through all this garbage, and they're not afraid to try to do the best they can to help. Some of them on the sly, because they know that if it's known that they're trying to help prisoners, they might end up losing their job or whatever the case may be. But I say prisoners should still have their rights to vote because they are American citizens. That does not take away from them. And unfortunately, we have people that are trying to prevent that from happening because they want to keep their corrupt attitudes and behaviors and everything else. I've spoken to politicians, just like I said with the prison system. You have some people in the prisons that are willing to work with us because they want to see these prisoners succeed. They don't want to see them with this revolving door. So they're willing to work with us. But then you have also, as I said before, you have people that are just as corrupt, and they don't want to see the success of the prisoners because they're benefiting. They're really making money off of these prisoners. So if the prisoners succeed, that means the prison rates will go down. Everything goes down, which gives them the opportunity to make more, to end up putting them back into prison so that they can keep that money flowing. We have a divided government, and we have, as far as I'm concerned, we have two governments. And I don't think people even know this. I can almost guarantee it. From what I see happening, I can almost guarantee that somebody else in this country knows a lot more what's going on in their government than people are really aware of. Too many things are happening. Too many things are happening. And Edward Snowden, he was one that was able to get it out. But unfortunately, a lot of people can't. A lot of people don't know enough about it. They can't do it. But Edward Snowden, he had the opportunity to know what was going on because he was working right in it, and he's getting a lot of it out. But getting back, we're looking for regional directors, by the way, as well. We need people to be regional directors for the areas that they're from, the states that they're from. Again, this is a national organization. We're doing national work. We need volunteer regional directors. We need grant writers, which right now is the least of my problems because I'm trying to get situated with these volunteer advocates that can be of help to us. So anyone that's interested in being a regional director from whatever state you're in, we need them in all the states. But I am just really tired. I'm tired of all the abuses going on. I'm tired of fighting a system that, with a government that doesn't either care or they don't have the intelligence to know how to run their own country. And this is pretty sad. And the only way that we can do anything about it is if maybe either we teach the government so that they are the ones that learn something from us, or if we just fight it. And if that's what we have to do to get justice so that more bodies are not going to be burned alive or baked alive, then we, so be it. So be it. I don't know what to say, Mary. I just know that it sickened me when I heard about it. It sickened me. I felt for the family. They said that the brother of this victim never even heard, got an apology or heard from the Department of Corrections or anything except from a chaplain that called him to tell him that his brother had died in such a horrific way. And that was it. That's how he heard what was going on. And that is the most inhumane, sick way of even telling somebody that they lost a loved one in that manner. And I can't even imagine what that family was going through, what they've been going through, knowing that this is the way their loved one died while trying to serve his time, just trying to serve his time. It's sick. The media, it's in the papers. They said one advocate said, well, it's already in the paper, so why should we do anything about it, or what should we do about it? Another one, she said, oh, if it's in the paper, we won't do anything. And then she sends me a separate email saying, can you imagine? What can we do about it? We can keep doing something about it until we know for sure. Until we know for sure that it's going to keep going until something is done about it. Until those people, those bullies, those barbaric people are punished or imprisoned. They're no different than anybody else. They should be in prison just like anybody else that commits such a horrific crime. And their crime was worse than many of the prisoners that are incarcerated, much worse. And if anybody thinks, because they're in uniform, that they're not criminals, just because they're in uniform and they're overseeing these people that they feel should be killed or should be beaten or should be tortured, then these people that feel that way, they don't realize that the person that is doing it to these prisoners could be very well doing it to them too, to their loved ones too. But because they have a uniform, it's supposed to make a big difference. Not in my eyes. Not in my eyes. So what do we do about it? What can we do about something like this? I'd like to have somebody that has an answer, because everybody seems to have an answer until it comes to a situation like this. Then nobody needs to know or wants to know how to even deal with it. To them, it's, you know, what do we do? It's already out there. What should we do? There's still a lot we can do. And people have shown that, because ever since we put this on Facebook, people have been trying to join the group that was started, although a lot of them can't seem to get in. But somebody did start a group, and apparently what it is, it's a blog website where people can go and post comments. But that's not what we want. We don't want comments. We want action. And so if anybody's having a problem getting into that site that was started so that we can actually come up with a plan of action, if anybody's having problems getting into that, just let us know. Also, People Against Prison Abuses with Flo, she, on her website, if everybody goes to www.peopleagainstprisonabuse.com, Flo, Papa has a link where they can go to that actually has the prisoner from Florida that was burned alive or scalded alive. She has a place on there where people can go, and also she's got all the elected officials, all the people they can contact right on her site. And that's peopleagainstprisonabuse.com/states/Florida/Florida.html. Again, it's peopleagainstprisonabuse.com/states/Florida/Florida.html. Flo has been doing an awesome job for the past, I don't know how many years. She's been advocating for the abused for so many years. She had the letter-writing campaign, which she had to give up because it became overwhelming with all the other things they're doing. So New Vision Organization, Inc. has taken over that responsibility. And when anyone goes to the website, they will see the letter-writing campaign. They can actually get the names of the prisoners who are in urgent need of help. They can get all that information right off of our website. We also have some links that will lead them to the right places to make the contacts. They can either email, they can fax, they can phone, make phone calls, they can write. So we have a variety of things that anybody can do, not only the students that we're getting from the universities, but people in the communities, family members, advocates, anyone that wants to do anything, however little or however much they want to do, it's out there. They can also go to our other website, which is www.newvisionorg.4t.com, and they can apply online to do volunteer work with us, and they can submit it online. So there's a lot of ways that people can sign up or join to help out with this issue or to help out with any other issues involving prisoners. So everyone's welcome to join in on whatever areas they want to help with. Prisoners seem to be the ones that suffer from everybody else's private motives, whatever it is they want in their life. The only ones that suffer is the prisoner, are the prisoners themselves. And that's something that needs to be stopped too. If anyone wants to ask questions, call in or whatever, we're here.
Okay, the telephone number to call in is 347-857-3293. I wonder, Liana, since your guest did not come and you weren't able to present Mr. Wombly to us, if I could go ahead and talk about some circumstances that are very close to the subject matter that you've been discussing.
Yes.
For the next 48 minutes. Okay, thank you very much. I would like for individuals to please go to Dog Justice for the Mentally Ill. That's dog justice. That is the kind of justice that our mentally ill fellow citizens are deprived of. They're deprived of dog justice. Dogs and cats and other domestic animals in America have rights and privileges that are denied to persons once they have diagnosed mental illness. They are not treated with the respect for life and freedom that dogs and cats have. So this blog is called Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. If you will go with me to Dog Justice for Mentally Ill, you'll see that our first story on top is about Mark Bowles, B-O-W-L-E-S. Now, Mark Bowles is a young man in Minnesota who is facing prosecution for having epileptic seizures during a traumatic brain injury episode in the hospital. Yes, Mark Bowles was in St. Cloud, Minnesota Hospital, and he woke up and started having an epileptic seizure. He scared the nurses who were in the room. One of the nurses fell and bumped her head, so he's being charged with assault, even though Mark Bowles did not touch her. Now, if these nurses are in the room of a patient who's in there for traumatic brain injury, why are they scared of a person if they're having epileptic seizures, first of all? It seems to me that that's a problem with the hospital and not Mark Bowles' problem. But they made it Mark Bowles' problem when they charged him with a crime because the nurse was trying to move out of his area where he was having an epileptic seizure, and she bumped her own head. Mark Bowles is facing trial on June 24th for having an epileptic seizure. Now, his case is the most blatant case of people being criminalized for having a brain issue that I know about. This man was already in the hospital for a traumatic brain injury, and he scared a nurse. So therefore, he faces prison by scaring a nurse in an incident, by the way, that he does not even remember. Mark Bowles got his traumatic brain injury while he was already incarcerated for misdemeanor offenses arising from his mental illness. Yes. He was already incarcerated for misdemeanor offenses that also arose from his mental illness. He was in jail, and this man fell in love with him or in lust with him. The man's name is allegedly Darcy T. Lewis. Now, Mark Bowles happens to be a Caucasian young man, 32 years old. Darcy T. Lewis is a very large young black man. And he decided he would rape Mark Bowles. And he first assaulted Mark Bowles. He put his hand in Mark Bowles' pants, and he put his hand between Mark Bowles' buttocks, allegedly. And he said, "I'm going to have that." Mark Bowles reported Darcy T. Lewis to the jail officials there at Anoka County Jail. He reported that he had been assaulted by Darcy T. Lewis, and he reported that Mr. Lewis had promised to rape him. And the jail did not do their part, which was probably either to move one of them to another floor or otherwise protect Mark Bowles from Darcy T. Lewis. However, that was not done, and one day Darcy T. Lewis was caught on film trying to drag Mark Bowles into a shower and possibly do the rape that he had been threatening to do. Mark Bowles, however, fought Darcy T. Lewis because he did not want to be a victim of jail rape. And Darcy T. Lewis allegedly used his fists as sledgehammers and kept pounding on Mark Bowles' head. And Mark Bowles was beaten comatose. And so now when Mark Bowles woke up in the hospital sometime later, he was in an epileptic crisis, and he is being prosecuted for being in an epileptic crisis in a hospital where he was being treated for traumatic brain injury. That is the first story in Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. Dog Justice for Mentally Ill has many stories about our fellow citizens, people who are loved by their families and friends, but they are deprived of due process of law. They're treated as though they have no right to life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness, because certainly nobody is happy locked up in jail and dodging rapists. Nobody is happy being beaten because they will not comply with rape. I believe that even people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, or queens, I believe even they would object to someone being beaten to a pulp because they will not bend over and have homosexual sex with somebody who wants to rape them. Also, the second story in Dog Justice for Mentally Ill blog concerns Terrell Scott, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, Scott, S-C-O-T-T. Terrell Scott was rearrested recently on indefensible charges. Terrell's present incarceration is the most blatant evidence of a mental patient's being prosecuted for being sick that this prisoner activist has ever heard of. Scott was rearrested on June 5th for failing to keep appointments with his probation office, although he was committed to a mental hospital at the time. Did you hear me? This man was charged with missing 3 probation appointments. 2 of the probation appointments were supposedly for days while this man was already not released from the jail yet. He was still in prison. He was in prison, and they set probation appointments to begin while he was still in prison. Now, how is that? And then they want to come after him for violating probation because he missed appointments that were set for days before he was released from prison. The third appointment that he missed, he was already committed to a mental hospital because when Terrell Scott came out of prison after nearly 5 years, he and his mother decided that it would be a good idea for him to be committed to a mental hospital. Given the wrong doses. So he came out of the prison and he needed new prescriptions for mental hospital medicine, and he needed to see psychiatric assistance because he was in PTSD. He had been through so much trauma as a mental patient in jail, in prison, that he needed PTSD help from psychiatrists, and he also needed them to assign him the right medications for himself. So he was committed to a mental hospital on the third day that they say Terrell Scott missed his probation appointment. Now, the hospital called the probation officer and let the probation office know that Terrell Scott was an inpatient, and also Terrell Scott's mother had called the probation office to let the probation office know that Terrell Scott was an inpatient. Yet and still, when he had been out of prison for 2 months exactly, he got out on March 5th. On June 5th, the police walked into the mental hospital where Terrell Scott was receiving treatment for his PTSD. And they demanded with their hands on tasers that he come with them. They removed him from his mental hospital and took him back to the place where he had been tortured for nearly 5 years, with trial denied. Yes, Terrell Scott was never given any trial. As a matter of fact, Terrell Scott signed a plea deal because he saw that he was never intended to get a trial and be allowed to prove his innocence. So we signed a plea deal. I want to ask everybody right now to talk to your children, talk to your mentally ill relatives about not accepting plea deals. That's very important because children and the mentally ill are responsible for 25% of the wrongful convictions. Their false confessions have been counted as being worth 25% of the wrongful convictions that happened. Now, our experts tell us that between 5,000 and 10,000 wrongful convictions happen every year. I imagine the rate is really higher than that. But between 5,000 and 10,000 wrongful convictions happen every year, so said a panel of judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys. So we know that wrongful convictions do happen. I want you to know that last year it was reported that even the forensic labs are at fault. Some laboratory technicians in forensic labs work directly with the prosecutors, and they skew the test results in order to make innocent people appear guilty and help their friends in the prosecutor's office win wrongful convictions. We need to do more about prosecutorial misconduct. I want to ask you how many of you saw the film that was on YouTube, and it shows you a judge attacking a defense attorney who refused to waive his client's right to a speedy trial. Yes, there's a Florida judge on film, on YouTube, who beat a defense attorney, a public defender, who refused to waive his client's right to a speedy trial. Now, why would that be good for prison investors if this man had waived his client's right to a speedy trial? Well, throughout this nation, we have individuals under incarceration who have been denied their right to a speedy trial, and that's the Sixth Amendment of the United States of America, that people have the right to answer criminal charges against them in an open and public forum, and they have the right to a speedy trial. So people are being denied their right to speedy trial, especially when they get defense attorneys who work with the prosecutors against their clients. And this public defender refused to do that. He stepped up to the podium and he said, "Your Honor, I will not waive my client's right to a speedy trial." And the judge said, "You don't have to help me. Sit down." Now, That's enough to make one think that they had talked off camera before the camera started rolling, that maybe the judge had asked this public defender to waive his client's right to a speedy trial, because the whole thing started out when they initially got called to the front, and the prosecutor came up to stand beside of his client, and he refused to do that. And the judge said, "You don't have to help me. Sit down. I'll do it myself." So the defense attorney said, "I will not sit down, Your Honor. I have a right to be here. This is my client, and I have every right to appear with him in court, and I will not waive his rights." And so the judge said, "You want a piece of me?" And he said, "Step outside, and we'll settle this." And so the man walked outside, the defense attorney walked outside to the area that the judge had appointed, and there was a fist fight between this judge and this defense attorney. Now, I knew that somehow defense attorneys were turning their backs on their clients, but I didn't know that they did that because judges would beat them up if they didn't. I said I did not know that defense attorneys are operating under the threat of a whooping if they refuse to do dirty things with these corrupt judges and prosecutors. So that is exactly what happened to the young man on the film when he refused to waive his client's right to a speedy trial. We have a disease in America, and it has spread throughout the country like an airborne disease. It's a virus, and it is called the prison investor's virus. It is biting judges all over the country. It is biting prosecutors all over the country. It is biting lawmakers all over the country. Yes, Yes, it is called the prison profiteering virus. These people get used to these big dividend checks that they get by throwing people in jail and denying trials in many cases and keeping them for years at taxpayer expense and denying trials until they're willing to sign a false confession. So this young man that I started out speaking to you about, his name is Terrell Scott. He did, after 5 years of very brutal incarceration, and I mean brutal, he did finally give in to his right for trial, and he did sign a false confession on himself. But he was only out of jail 2 months before he was rearrested on false charges again. So do not think that because you comply with the prosecutor's demands that you sign a false confession that the system is necessarily through with you. Do not think that that's going to get you out of jail and get you back on your feet, because these people are so corrupt and they want that prison investment money so badly that they will come back and get you in a month or two on more false charges. So therefore, I recommend that everybody talk to their children, because most false confessions come from children or the mentally ill. Talk to your children, even young children as young as 10 through 12, and talk to your mentally ill relatives and tell them that you never give in, you never give up, you never accept responsibility for something that you did not do. You never sign a lie on yourself, because once you do that, then they're going to put that down on your record as a crime you did, and they will come right back sometimes with more false charges, and because by that time you've admitted to something you did, then you have a criminal record that says you're a bad person, and it's easier to get the next false charge through, even if they do go to trial. I said that makes the next false charge they levy against you have more credence because you said the other one. So prison investors don't give up, in other words. They will keep pounding and pounding, just like that man pounded Mark Bowles' head when he wanted to rape him. They will keep pounding and pounding until they find a way to lock up a person if they have targeted a person or incarceration. They will continue to do that. It is a part of the disease, and the disease is called the prison investors virus, and they will come back after you anyway. So you may as well, while you are incarcerated on false charges, if they will deny you trial, just keep trying to get a trial. Just keep trying to notify authorities that you are wrongly arrested without trial. You have a leg to stand on then, but once you sign that false confession, they will come back after you with more false charges, and then where's your leg to stand on? Terrell Scott was arrested 2 months after release on his plea bargain. He was rearrested on more false charges, and that was that he had skipped probation appointments. The truth is he had missed 3 probation appointments, but that is because the crooked prison profiteering system had set up 2 appointments for while he was still in the hospital. Now, what is someone to say? Is someone supposed to go to the warden and say, "Warden, excuse me, sir, I need to get out of prison today because I have a probation appointment"? How are you on probation and incarcerated in prison at the same time? This is what they did to Terrell Scott. And number 2, he missed the probation appointment because he was an inpatient at the mental hospital. He was committed to the mental hospital. Now, have you ever heard of a psychiatric patient going to the hospital administrator and saying, "Excuse me, I don't have time to continue being mentally ill today. I'm going to snap to it, and I've got to go to a probation appointment. I will come back right after it, and I will continue to be mentally ill after my probation appointment"? No. Mental patients who are committed to the mental hospital cannot just get out and go to probation appointments or go grocery shopping or go buy new jeans and come back. If you're committed to a mental hospital, you must stay there until you are legally released. So this is why Terrell Scott is being prosecuted because he missed probation appointments that were scheduled for times when he was imprisoned or committed to a mental hospital. And then I wrote this article about that, and of course the judges and the phony defense attorneys and the prosecutors realized that that was ridiculous, and so because they have the prison investors' violence, they came up with something new. Holly Alston, who is the mother of Terrell Scott, told me that on Friday, they took Terrell Scott up to the floor for people who have alcohol and drug abuse problems. Yes, Terrell Scott, who was arrested for missing probation appointments, was transferred on Friday up to the floor where people are detoxing. Even though Terrell Scott has never failed any drug test, he's never been arrested for drug or alcohol. He's never had a drug or alcohol problem. He's never smoked a joint. He didn't even inhale it and not smoke it or whatever. He never even had anything to do with this. This young man has been a psychiatric patient since he was a young boy. He has never had any kind of test that he failed for drugs or alcohol. He has never been charged with drug or alcohol possession, yet his so-called defense attorney took the judge, Judge Zito, Z-I-T-O, in order to sign, to have him, to court order him into prison for 6 months on drug and alcohol offenses. Do you hear me, ladies and gentlemen? This is an American citizen who is deprived of his right to liberty by a defense attorney who's acting against him, who took an order to Judge Zito, Z-I-T-O, and asked Judge Zito to send his client to a floor of the prison and order him into prison for 6 months for drug and alcohol offenses that have no basis in fact. This young man has never been tested for drugs and alcohol. He has never failed the test for drugs and alcohol. He's never been arrested for drugs or alcohol. He's got no drugs or alcohol usage in his background whatsoever. This is a completely out-of-the-blue false charge against Terrell Scott. Terrell Scott. But Terrell Scott is a black man, and his family has spent all the money that they can spend on attorneys. His first attorney was Theo Lauer, L-A-U-E-R, who worked against him and kept his case out of court for 4.5 years while this young man suffered greatly behind prison walls. He was denied a trial, and then his family scraped together another $2,500 and paid this new attorney, Attorney Clark, and thought that things might be different since Clark is a black man. Oh, no, ladies and gentlemen, no, 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 no. Please don't think that the justice system operates on black and white. Everybody in the justice system is subject to being prison investors. Prison investors. It doesn't matter whether they're black, white, or otherwise. They could be prison investors. So these prison investors are talking about the same thing. They're talking about green money. So this black man, Mr. Clark, an attorney, a defense attorney in Pennsylvania, got together with Judge Zito, Z-I-T-O, and they decided to remand Terrell Scott to prison for 6 months on charges without any evidence whatsoever and without any opportunity for Terrell Scott to stand trial on those charges before a jury of his peers. I frankly think that's illegal. Yeah, but I'm not an attorney, but it's not illegal to just point at a person and say, take them to jail, put them in there for 6 months for drug and alcohol use. If it's not illegal to do that, then it certainly ought to be, because everybody, again, should have the Sixth Amendment, and that is the right to have a public trial on criminal allegations. Everybody should have the right to a public trial on criminal allegations. And so Terrell Scott has been deprived of a criminal trial
all those allegations that were made against him. I don't know why he's eligible for that, except that he is a black mentally ill person. Yes, not only is he black, because black people are treated bad all the time in the justice system, but he's also mentally ill. And mentally ill people are treated badly, whether they are black or white or Asian or Native American, you name it. So you put those two things together, and you get a person who's treated as though they have no rights whatsoever, no rights whatsoever. So that's the second story in Dog Justice for Mentally Ill, and I invite you to read more about that. I also have another young man in that story, and that's Shanani Modi, and his last name is spelled N-Y-A-M-O-D-I. He's an innocent youth that was incarcerated in North Carolina. He's been held there in solitary confinement for the better part of 2 years in order to force him to sign a confession on a crime he did not do. He held up very well for 2 years, even though he was just a child, 18 when they got him, and wanted him to sign this false confession. They kept him in solitary, which is supposed to weaken your brain, and trying every day to make him sign a false confession, and he did not do it. But what they did was they played a little mind game with him, and they moved him from that solitary prison cell in Franklin County, North Carolina, to another North Carolina facility. When he got to this other North Carolina prison facility, they gave him a little bit of freedom. He was able to talk on the phone. He was able to write letters. He was able to accept visits from his family. So they gave him a little touch of greater freedom. They let him actually have visitors. They let him actually mail. They let him actually make phone calls. No longer was he spending 23 and 24 hours a day in a small jail cell. And then, out of the blue, after a week or two of relative relaxing freedom, I mean, you know, this boy was treated so bad in Franklin County, North Carolina jail that another prison was like a breath of fresh air, because he was able to talk to other inmates. He was able to visit with his family on visiting days. He was able to call home from time to time. That was like a breath of fresh air after torturous solitary confinement for 2 years, and that's exactly what they wanted it to be to him. So
Harry,
I was just going to ask,
With these prisoners you're talking about, why hasn't anybody sent them to us to put on our page for the advocates to write to? Write on behalf of, I mean.
These are the people that I wrote to you about a month ago, but I think that you yourself were facing surgery and you had very little assistance at the time. I wrote to you about these people.
Okay.
I want to say about Shanani Modi is that they switched him back to Franklin County, North Carolina jail. And when they switched him back, the same attorney who he had fired, his name is Mike Klinkosum, K-L-I-N-K-O-S-U-M, he went into that solitary confinement cell with that greatly heartbroken young man who they had switched back to his torture chamber, and he got that sad confession. So I don't know how much weight confessions that are pulled out of people by torture are supposed to be worth. What are torture confessions worth? Well, we know that in Illinois, people were tortured with water up their butt, you know, enemas with water hoses, beaten and what have you. And some of them said false confessions, and some of them are still incarcerated years later. So false confessions are worth quite a good deal. I think that everybody should stand up against false confessions that are derived by torture. Even if the torture is limited to just solitary confinement, that is very torturous. And that is what happened to Terrell Scott, and it also happened to Shanani Modi, and that's on the second story in Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. Anyone who wants to be an advocate, if you just go to Dog Justice for Mentally Ill, that's all you have to do to find plenty of cases of inmates who are in danger of being killed behind bars. You don't have to wait until someone is dead, like Mr. Darren, who was murdered in Florida by scalding to death. You don't have to wait until Jerome Murdaugh and people like him are burned to death in Rikers Island. You have the opportunity to save lives. You have the opportunity to save some of these people who are right now facing death in prison for crimes that they did not commit. For instance, Terrell Scott has been sent to the floor where people are highly excited. He's a mentally ill man. He was taken from the hospital where he was there getting treatment for PTSD. He was sent to the floor with people who are detoxing from serious drug habits and alcohol. I submit to you, I believe he was sent there to kill him. I believe they hope that he will do something wrong or that one of those people will do something that scares him, and I think they want him to be killed. That's what I personally think. Because why would you send a mentally ill person who already has problems assimilating information and acting, why would you send them to surround them with people who are on a short fuse because they're detoxing? I think this is a killer scenario that they have put Terrell Scott in, and they removed him from his mental hospital in order to subject him to false imprisonment in a ward with people who are detoxing. And not only that, but they also dressed him in the color that means murderer or child molester. He is dressed different from other people on that floor. He is dressed in a color that means murderer or child molester because child molestation is the false charge that he was in prison at first on, and they refused to give him a trial for 4.5 years. A woman that he had broken up with, an ex-lover, lied and said that he molested her children as retaliation for him, and he never was given a trial on it because there had been no molestation. But since he was kept in jail 4.5 years, he did sign a confession on it, and that's the color suit he must wear. Among these people who are on a short fuse because they're detoxing from drugs and alcohol, I think that Terrell Scott is in great trouble today. He's in great danger today. And that is the situation of this mentally ill young man who was in a hospital in Pennsylvania, sent their police to remove him from a treating environment to throw him in jail. All for your tax money. All for your tax money. All for your tax money. Prison profiteering has spread throughout America like an airborne disease. And the final story I want to tell you about right now is the story about Damien Hayes, D-A-M-I-O-N, Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S. Damien Hayes was given a life sentence for mental illness. Damien Hayes was given a life sentence in the state of Florida for having a mental illness. Damien Hayes is a young man who, at the age of 17, his mother and daddy noticed that this boy had started losing his marbles. He started just doing absolutely uncharacteristic things. He started having panic attacks. He started being angry for no reason. He started arguing with people who were not there. He started knocking holes in his mother and daddy's wall. And so his father wanted him to go to a mental hospital and see what on earth is wrong with my teenage son. He's 17. We can't get him to go to school anymore. He's having imaginary arguments with people who are not there. He's knocking holes in our wall. What on earth is going on with this boy? And so he was sent to a place to be evaluated for mental illness, but they only kept him 2 days. And then they released him back to his father's care and did not tell his father what was wrong with him, didn't give him any psychiatric drugs, did not give him an appointment to come back and see a psychiatrist or anything. Now, Mr. Hayes has explained to us that he realizes now that he should have done more. He should have insisted, what's wrong with my son? What do you mean come back and get him? When will he see a doctor and what have you? But see, the thing is that people who are not used to dealing with mental illness, even families who are not used to dealing with mental illness, they don't know what to do, some of them, when they are denied help. They don't know what to do. And so that was Mr. Hayes' situation. He never had any mental illness to deal with before in his family. He didn't know what to do when he took his son for treatment, and they just turned him back to him, and they did not say, bring him back Wednesday for an appointment. They did not say, here are the medicines that he needs to be on. They just said, come get him. So Mr. Hayes said, well, maybe this means that he's not mentally ill. Maybe he's just really hard-headed. So that's the thing. Families who are not used to dealing with mental illness, they don't know what to do when the system denies treatment. They don't know that the system is set up to deny treatment to preserve that person untreated for prison. They don't realize that it's a setup to deny people who are sick treatment so that that person will eventually do something worthy of improvement. They have no idea that that's going on. That happened to Damien Hayes. 1 year after he was denied treatment, he jumped on a neighbor and assaulted her, and now he's in jail for life. I said life. The thing is that he didn't kill anybody, and the woman seems to be in good health. But when the mentally ill are charged, they're usually overcharged for the same offenses as someone else might get a few months in prison. They oftentimes get 30 and 40 years or life. So these are the circumstances, ladies and gentlemen, regarding the mentally ill. You're getting it from me. My name is Mary Neal. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We're asking you to go to MBO and volunteer your services. Even if it's just a letter, I ask you to go online to Google and Google the words contact public officials or contact elected officials, and you will be asked your zip code. You put in your zip code, and they will connect you to your elected officials. You can write your congresspersons, your state legislature, your U.S. president, your whomever. You can do it off that site, contact elected officials. So you don't have to join Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. You don't have to join a new vision organization, although we hope you will. You can do it right now. You can, maybe your heart was touched when you heard about Terrell Scott facing death on the floor of the Pennsylvania prison that is really reserved for people with serious drug habits and alcoholism. Maybe you have some sympathy for Mark Bowles, a poor white boy who happens to be a veteran. He happens to be a U.S. veteran. And he was in jail, and he was being hit upon by this man who wanted to rape him. He resisted, and so he was beaten into a traumatic brain injury. And now he's facing incarceration on June 24th for scaring nurses when he had an epileptic crisis. Maybe your heart was touched about this young man I told you about, Damien Hayes. Damien Hayes, who was refused mental health care treatment, refused mental health care treatment. But then he went off one day and jumped on his neighbor and assaulted her. And now, instead of getting sentenced to a hospital for treatment, they sentenced him to prison for life. He has already been in prison, mostly in solitary confinement, for 14 years. 14 years living in one little closet cell. I think this is wrong, and guess what? If you let this go on without your objection, then you are the person that God will be disgusted with. I say God will be disgusted with you because he said, such as you do unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you do also unto me. So it's time for you to look at the governors of these abusive states. It's time for you to look at the abusive states. It's time for you to look at the Department of Corrections, who probably own more prison stock than anybody. It's time for you to talk to them. But if you let this happen without your objection, then I say to you that it's you that God is looking at. And so you may not be a Christian, you may not believe in an all-powerful, omnipotent God, but I hope you believe in democracy and human rights. And if you do, I ask you to go to Dog Justice for Mentally Ill and please help some of the people who are written about in that blog. I have cases like the three I told you about. Well, four if you count Shannon now, Modi, and he's not mentally ill. he's not mentally ill, but they were trying to make him lose his mind by putting him in solitary confinement. And, of course, they did finally break him and make him sign a confession for something that he did not do. He had spent 2 years in solitary confinement refusing to sign a false confession until they switched him to a better prison where he had a few more freedoms and then switched him back to solitary confinement in Franklin County Jail in the middle of the night. And when they did that, that broke him. So that's the situation. That's the circumstance. That is what's happening in America. And now, you know, Leona,
thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. This was New Vision Organization. NBO is the prisoner activist group. And I appreciate Leona Brando for letting me have the last 45 or 50 minutes of her show to advise you about some circumstances that are happening right now today with people who have mental illness or brain disorders who are incarcerated in your nation's jails and prisons at your expense. So these people are being subjected to torture at your expense. I want you to object to that. I want you to write to me at MaryLovesJustice@gmail.com. That's MaryLovesJustice, L-O-V-E-S, @gmail.com, and I will be glad to hear from you. You can put Mary Loves Justice into your Google browser and be taken to a blog by that name, Mary Loves Justice, to read about more incidents and more opportunities for you to stand up for justice, to help people who cannot help themselves. Give voice to the voiceless. And that is all we try to do here, is make you aware of circumstances where people are being deprived of their rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as well as other rights. For instance, the right to speedy public trials, the right to defense by competent attorneys, not people who pretend to be their attorneys and work for the prosecuting office instead. I ask you to be aware of Jenny Cochran Burn Fraud. That's what I write about. Also, the Cochran Burn Fraud, F-R-A-U-D, that is a covert program against African Americans' pursuit of justice throughout the nation. Please put that into your Google browser, Cochran Burn Fraud, with my name, Neri Neal, and that's N-E-A-L, to find out about that. There's lots for us to work on together. We should stand together in unity. We must unite for justice across all racial and social economic lines. We must not let political parties be our dividing line. We must not let the color of our skins be our dividing line. We must not let political party loyalty be our dividing line. We must unite for justice. You can join us every day around 3 p.m. here at Human Rights Demand, where we make a demand for human rights for all people. On Fridays, it's at 6:30 p.m., but every other day is at 3 o'clock p.m. Our Sunday show is sometimes aired and sometimes not. When I air it, now, thank you for joining us today. Please come back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Good day to you, and God bless you.